The following program is a debate between the Democratic candidates for Montana's U.S. Senate seat that is up for election in 2020. The Democratic candidates for other offices are introduced first, then Mr. Mike Wheat is introduced and moderates the debate. This event was recorded by KGVM on Friday, February 21st, 2020, at the Emerson Crawford Theater, and the event was sponsored by the Gallatin County Democrats.
I also have to say thank you off the bat to J.P. Gabriel and Film Lights Montana for donating his equipment and expertise to make this event happen. Thank you, J.P. I would also like to take a moment at the beginning here to express gratitude. I would like to acknowledge the gratitude we have towards the many indigenous nations who call this valley their homeland. Many thanks to the Blackfeet, Crow, Shoshone, and others who have lived here since time immemorial and protected the waters, land, air, and animals. May we proceed with the spirit of respect and generosity that these nations have displayed. All right, folks. Now we're going to introduce again our candidates. These are the individuals that are collectively fighting for your vote and fighting for your values and are going to help turn Gallatin County and Montana blue in 2020. To begin, we have our candidates for the U.S. House of Representatives, our sole seat in Congress. First, we have Tom Winter. Welcome, Tom. And Kathleen Williams. Our candidate, our Democratic candidate for State Superintendent, Melissa Romano. My two brothers from the legislature, Bryce Bennett, our candidate for Secretary of State. Shane Morgio, candidate for State Auditor. Kim Dudick, candidate for Attorney General. And Rafe Graybill, candidate for Attorney General. We also have our local legislator and Democratic candidate for the Public Service Commission, Tom Woods. Our candidates for Montana House of Representatives in 2020. We have Ed Staffman running for House District 62. Kelly Cordham, candidate for House District 65. Alice Buckley, candidate for House District 63. Also my fiance, lucky me. Jim Hamilton, candidate for House District 61. And Denise Heyman, who is running for her fourth term in House District 66. Chris Pope, candidate for Senate District 32. And then our last two, but not least, certainly, we have Sandy Earhart, who's running for Clerk of District Court as a Democrat. And yours truly, Zach Brown, I'm running for Gallatin County Commission. Thank you. Here you have it, folks. These are your people. Treat them well. Give them our thanks for putting their necks out there to protect democracy and stand up for our values. One more round of applause for these wonderful humans. Thank you all. Next, I would like to just invite our moderator to the stage, Mike Wheat, who is a luminary in this community. Mike served as a Montana State Senator in the early 2000s, and most recently retired from the Montana Supreme Court. Mike, take it away, and thank you for being with us.
Hello there. Good evening, everybody. I feel kind of like a DJ up here, the way I'm sitting. Just to give you an idea of what we're going to do here, these are the Senate candidates that we're going to do first, and then later on we'll do the gubernatorial. All of the candidates sent in a short bio. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce the candidates. I'll read their bio and then introduce them to you. So that'll take a short period of time. And then once they're all on stage, I will start asking the questions, and they will each have 1 minute to answer those questions. So that's the format which we're going to follow. With that, let me get started here. The first candidate is John Muse, a fourth-generation Montanan. John grew up in a single-parent household in Helena, Deer Lodge, and Wolf Point, Montana, before being nominated by Montana congressperson to the U.S. Naval Academy, from which he graduated with academic honors. An active-duty naval officer, he was four times deployed and entrusted with the lives of thousands of people during Operation Iraqi Freedom. He then served his country again as a high school math and English teacher at the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation. Since, John has been a senior engineer in the business sector with an MBA from the London Business School and has owned and improved an operating cattle ranch in Montana. Please welcome John Muse. And I must say, I apologize for reading this, but I couldn't get it all memorized in time. Next, Wilmot Collins. Mayor Wilmot Collins came to Montana, Helena, Montana, as a refugee 26 years ago. He's juggled multiple jobs all at the same time, including a 22-year military career, a teacher, social worker, child protection specialist, a veterans outreach coordinator, a two-year college professor, and mayor of Helena. In 2019, he was named one of the Carnegie Corporation's best immigrants. He has spoken at the UN High Commission on Refugees and the Academy of Cultural Diplomacy's 30th anniversary fall of the Berlin Wall celebration. He holds a bachelor's degree in political science, a master's degree in human resources, and has completed his coursework for a PhD in forensic psychology. Please join me in welcoming Wilmot Collins. Cora Newman. Cora, a Bozeman native, is a public health leader and public lands expert with two decades of experience improving access to health care, expanding economic development, and protecting access to public lands. She launched the Global First Ladies Alliance in partnership with the offices of First Ladies Laura Bush and Michelle Obama. The organization empowers First Ladies around the world to stay accountable to hardworking families and use their power to do more for their constituents. She served at the State Department in the Economic Bureau, where she focused on job creation, economic diplomacy, and women's economic development. She advocated for access to parental leave and promoted women's entrepreneurship across the globe. Cora lives with her family in Bozeman, surrounded by four generations of family, from her grandmother and grandfather to her two children, Tamia and Levi. Please welcome Cora Newman. Mike Knowles. Mike is a mathematician with revolutionary ideas on how to fix our country. Born and raised in a small town has not stopped him from developing big ideas. Mike's plan for change includes fixing the economy, reforming education, and catching those people our country keeps letting fall through the cracks. America is a democracy, and it should not be run by lawyers and businessmen. I'm a lawyer, and that's tough. That's tough on me. The only way to fix the mess we are in is through bold action and comprehensive change. Mike Knowles will stand up in the biggest way possible to make these changes. Please welcome Mike Knowles. I think I scared him. Last but not least is Josh Seckinger. Josh chose to make his home in Montana 11 years ago. Florida-born and Wisconsin-raised, Josh settled in the Gallatin Valley at the age of 23 and has worked a variety of jobs. Seismic mapping, exploration, food delivery, and working for an environmental lawyer. For the past 5 years, Josh has worked as a fly fishing guide on some of Montana's most precious resources, including the Smith, the Madison, and the Yellowstone Rivers. Based out of the Bozeman area, but often on the road for work, Josh has worked in and around Sydney, White Sulphur Springs, Twin Bridges, Billings, Culbertson, and the Flathead Valley, and beyond. Frequent travel and a love of the outdoors helped him learn about Montana, while his engaging and extroverted personality helped him learn about its people. Josh has gained a unique perspective about life in Montana, the needs and wants of everyday working Montanans, and the best path forward for the state, based on years of simply talking, listening, and engaging with the people of the Big Sky Country. For Josh, one thing is abundantly clear. Montanans believe we must ensure the last best place stays that way. Please welcome Josh Seckinger. You guys ready for this?
No.
I know the crowd is, and I know I am. Okay, we're going to start on that end. And John, I'm going to ask you the first question, and then we'll work our way down. John will answer first, and then each after that. You each have 1 minute to answer the question, okay? First question, it's about health care. President Obama's Affordable Care Act has provided vital health insurance coverage to 20 million Americans, including 45,000 Montanans. The Republicans seek to eliminate the ACA and its protections for pre-existing conditions, lifetime coverage caps, and other critical benefits. Access to health care is a voter priority. What health care policies do you support and why?
First of all, I want to thank you, Mike, everybody at Gallatin County Democrats for putting on this fantastic event. Thank you so much. This is exactly what we need. We need to vet our candidates. Otherwise, we're going to lose in 2020 to Senator Daines. So thank you all, and thank you for being here. So this is absolutely one of the biggest hot topic issues in the presidential race, what have you. The first thing we need to do is beat Senator Daines and make sure these attacks, incessant attacks on basic healthcare coverage for those with pre-existing conditions, are stopped in their tracks. But I think the framework is false. The idea that you need to be Medicare for all, or you need to be public option, or you need to be simply incremental change with the Affordable Care Act, that is a false notion. I wish, honestly, the presidential debate was geared in a different direction. Because ultimately, the question is, do you believe healthcare is a human right or not? I do, and whether we can hit a home run, let's do it. But if it requires, because of political constraints, to stay within the bounds of a public option or incremental change to the Affordable Care Act, we need to do that too. We need to be pragmatic, but at the same time, we need to move the chains down the field towards the ultimate idea of healthcare as a human right.
Thank you, John. Wilmont.
Thank you, Gallatin County Democrat. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for coming. Health care is a human right. I am in full support of the Affordable Care Act, but with the way we're going presently, with the way the Republican government is tearing it apart, what they're telling us is they do not care. Now, what we need to do as Democrats, as citizens of Montana, I benefited from, my family benefited from the ACA, and I'm going to do my darnest to keep the ACA moving. But if the shoot by any means damage it to the point where we can't see our way out of this, when I get to the Senate, I will be able to read every bill, every health care bill, and make a decision that will be best for Montana. And that's what I'm going to do.
Thank you, Wilmont. Cora?
Thank you. I'll echo the thank you to the Gallatin County Dems. I'm happy to have you all here in my hometown of Bozeman. I grew up actually right down the street on South Grand, and we have lots of family here tonight. So thank you all. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Zach. Healthcare is very personal to me. I lost my father in a lumber mill accident when I was a baby. And if we had been closer to specialized care and the care that he needed, he may have survived. When I travel this state, I hear from families across the state about the critical needs they have in healthcare. Some Montanans are driving up to 5 hours to reach the care they need. We have, right now, Medicaid expansion under the ACA has helped bring critical care to 10% of Montanans. That's closer, I think it's actually closer to 90,000 people are covered by Medicaid expansion. It's something that we must protect. Our junior Republican incumbent, Steve Daines, has regularly attacked this coverage, which is so critical to the survival of families across Montana, families like mine that needed that care. It's unconscionable. As senator, I would protect Medicaid expansion. I would vote for a public option, look into a public option, into a Medicare buy-in. And one of the other things that our Senator Daines has stood by and watched is this administration taking aim at both Medicare and Social Security. Healthcare will be a top priority for me in the Senate, and I look forward to serving you.
Thank you. Mike?
I believe in the words of our forefathers and the words of our ancestors. And when the founders of this nation stood up and wrote the words that we have inalienable rights, including the right to life, that is what they were talking about. The way that we treat people in this country, the way we treat sick people in this country, is unconscionable. We need to do better. And I believe that the people of Montana are that group of people who can stand up and have those ideas. When I built my platform, what I did is I went around to everybody around me, every person that I met at the bar, everyone that I met at the gym, everyone that I could possibly talk to, and ask them about politics. And the solutions we came up with are not the current solutions that we have right now. We cannot continue down this path of spending tomorrow's resources on today's expenses. So first we need to get our budget in order, and then we need to start talking to people across the aisle, because I guarantee you that if you go talk to Republicans, they agree that healthcare should be affordable, and we can convince everybody in this state and in this nation that healthcare should be a human right, as everyone else on this stage agrees.
Thank you, Mike. Josh.
Thanks, everybody. I'd like to thank the Gallatin County Democrats for having me. I announced on Tuesday, so it's a real honor to be here. you know, as a fishing guy, I believe I may be the only person on this stage who ever shopped for insurance on the marketplace, the Affordable Care Marketplace. And I'm sick and tired of choosing between a policy that simply prevents bankruptcy or slowly causes it. I'm absolutely in favor of a public option moving towards a Medicare for All system. This country needs to guarantee health care for our citizens. It is absolutely a human right. And we can get it done. That's it. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Josh. That's how you answer a question in under 1 minute.
Yes.
It's really quick.
All right. The next question, and we're going to start with you, Wilmont, is related to prescription drugs. Prescription drug costs are a constant worry and stress for all Montanans. What are your policy solutions to address the high costs of prescription medications?
We need to put regulations on Big Pharma. But before we get there, we the people provide the research for prescription drugs. We the people provide the financing for prescription drugs. And then what happens? Other countries have it cheaper than us. Why? If we're providing everything it takes to make those drugs, it should be cheaper for us. But if we have to go to Canada and elsewhere to get those prescription drugs, something wrong with that. That's why we need to regulate Big Pharma. Big Pharma is killing us. And that's what I intend to do. We must regulate those pharmacy agencies that we provide assistance to that make the drugs, and then we pay for it. So,
thank you, Wilmont. Cora?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. We have a situation right now where 1 in 5 Montanans is foregoing medicine, critical medicine that they need because of pharmaceutical and drug prices. We have a situation where the research that is going into this is costing more than it needs to. We need to regulate, as I agree with Wilmont, we need to regulate pharmaceutical drug prices, pharmaceutical research. Right now we have a situation where insurance companies, hospitals, and the pharmaceutical industry are all passing costs down to patients. What that leads to is critical shortages. In some cases, families are paying up to $1,000 to get insulin. This is something that absolutely needs to be addressed. It's part of reform. We have a House bill that's been introduced, one of many bills that's sitting dead on Mitch McConnell's desk, which is one of the reasons we need to flip the Senate. But there are bills, there are proposals out there that are creating a competitive marketplace for drug prices and for the pharmaceutical industry. We need to flip the Senate so that we can pass those bills and stop allowing corporate interests to pass the costs on to patients.
Thank you, Cora. Mike?
Of those plans that I've been talking to local everybody around me that I can, one person I met, an inventor over in Livingston, told me of an idea we discussed through called the Anti-Gouging Act. And the Anti-Gouging Act would prevent corporations or anybody from gouging, right? When we have a hurricane and the water prices suddenly go up astronomically, or when you're, this helps with, and this ties in here to the healthcare, to the drug prices, is if we are able to keep issues like drug prices and single-use, you know, drug containers in healthcare systems that cost 700,000 times what they should, then we're never going to get anywhere. But beyond that, if we really want to start digging into these issues, we need to go even deeper than that. And we need to end corruption in our government. We need to end the corrupting influence of money that allows companies like Big Pharma to get in there and buy laws that we as citizens do not have the ability to do as well.
Thank you, Mike. Josh?
All right, I'm going to shoot for the full minute. You know, prescription drug costs are it's an interesting topic for me because my insurance is so bad that I couldn't go get a prescription if I wanted to. I have that bronze plan thing where it's going to prevent bankruptcy, but it's not going to do much else. You know, I think it is absurd that the government cannot negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for prescription prices. It is absolutely absurd. I think that's the first step in this situation here. You know, outside of that, I'm 34 and healthy, thank God, and haven't had a whole lot of experience with this, but I'm absolutely willing to learn what will work for everyone in this room. You know, I think that's what differs me from everybody, is I'm willing to say, I don't know, and hear it from you. And this is one of those topics where I don't really know. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. You still made it under a minute. John?
You know, this is a topic that impacts everybody, not just our seniors. For the last 4 months or so, my wife and I have essentially lived in a hospital next to our newborn son recovering from a life-threatening illness. And the first tranche of bills we received was $80,000, one of many to come. I absolutely understand our healthcare issues, but on the very specific topic of pharmaceutical drug pricing, we need to do something emergently. There is a current crisis right now. We need to make sure that seniors are not choosing between food on the table and taking their prescription drugs. We need current legislation that addresses this situation now, and then we need to look at this in a more macro way. We need to make sure that indeed we can negotiate, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, VA, what have you. We need to make sure that we can leverage economies of scale to truly drive processes costs down, and also aggregate our negotiating power as different entities, and that could, in the short term, include private entities. As one monolithic negotiating power, we can radically reduce prescription drug prices. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, our next question is about minimum wage, and we start with you, Cora. The federal minimum wage has been $7.25 since 2009. Montana's minimum wage recently increased to $8.50. California's is $12, and in some cities, it's been raised to $15. As a senator, would you support an increase of the federal minimum wage, and if so, to what amount?
Thank you. As I mentioned before, I think I mentioned earlier, I was raised by a union carpenter. My stepfather, who my mom met here in Bozeman when I was six, was a union carpenter, and I would not be here without those union wages, those good wages. We have families across the state. Montana has a low unemployment rate, but we are at the top, the bottom 10% in terms of level of wages. We have a huge outdoor recreation industry and tourism industry. 50,000 workers in that industry are not making wages that they need to live. Families are working 2 to 3 jobs to put food on the table. There are some incredible plans out there, again, dead on Mitch McConnell's desk, that are focused on a staggered minimum wage. Here in Montana, we have 10,000 small businesses. This is the home of small businesses and entrepreneurs. 10,000 small businesses that are about to, with owners that are about to retire. There are federal incentives that we can put in place that help ensure that those businesses stay alive, and don't just keep them alive, but help create incentive programs for better wages for the workers that are coming to keep our rural communities across the state, like many rural communities across the country, thriving.
Cora, would you raise it, and if so, to what amount?
I would not have one standard federal minimum wage raise. I would have a staggered wage. There are plans out there that take into account the locale that they are actually raising the wage in, right? So it wouldn't be a blanket $15 an hour. It would be staggered based on the businesses in that area.
Okay. Mike?
First, to answer your question, I am not a proponent of raising the minimum wage, but if it were brought to me from the rest of my party or from the other side of the aisle either, then I would vote for it. It's not something I'm against. I just believe that there are better ways to do this, because right now, talking about minimum wage is missing the point, because when we have... It's missing the point because not everybody works and not everybody can work. And so my plan would be to implement a universal basic income. That's what I would do. And at the same time, yes, we do need to worry about wages, and we do need to worry about issues about, you know, corporations having one of some of the worst practices, and we need to take the burden. We need to take the burden of health care off of employers so that, number one, when you lose your employment, you do not lose your health care, and you do not lose your basic income. And at the same time, you set up a system where, in my version of universal basic income, I tie it to education. So to increase the amount that you need, if you lose your job, you can go back and get a better education paid for by the government.
Thank you, Mike. Josh?
The idea of minimum wage means I would pay you less if I could, but I can't. I am 100% in support of a federal minimum wage of $15 an hour with an increase for inflation every 2 years. Do I need to take the rest of the minute, or are we there?
Let's get some more questions.
Thank you, Josh. John?
So I could be wrong about this, but I don't think I am. I think I'm the only person on this stage with any substantive business experience. So let me talk about this from the standpoint of a business. I fully support a federal minimum wage of $15 per hour everywhere, and states can increase that as they need. But I will tell you from a business standpoint, and Senator Daines will hit every single response up here mercilessly, and he will get every single small business owner to agree with him, and we will lose the election. We need to make sure that a government subsidy helps small business owners adjust for their cost structure, which would rise with a higher minimum wage. I grew up in all sorts of little small Montana towns, Deer Lodge, Wolf Point. I live in Loma. I've been up every single place you can think of in Montana. And when cost structure increases, owners actually put out a mea culpa asking their customers for forgiveness, even if it's 5 cents. We need to raise the minimum wage to a federal $15, but we also need a government subsidy to help small business owners scale that nationwide. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Wilmont?
I support $15 minimum wage. I've said that from day one. But let's look at, we have to realize that the stock market is not our economy. Because there are lots of people, there are 42% of Americans that are involved with the stock market, but the 1% really take care of the stock market. The other 57-58% that are not in the stock market, how do we compensate them for that? How do we uplift the economy? And people are saying, oh, small businesses will go out of business. No, they won't. People will look forward to going to work. People will work. Right now, if I have to choose between a $7 an hour and going to my wife's graduation, I'll go to my wife's graduation. But if I have to choose $15 and go to my wife, we will have to negotiate. So, yes, $15 an hour is where I will go.
Thank you, Wilmont. All right, our next question, and we'll start with you, Mike, is related to women's rights. One of the primary strategies implemented by the Trump administration to attack women's rights and equality is nominating ultra-conservative judges to the federal court system. As of February 12, 2020, 190 judges have been confirmed, and I can guarantee you one of them is unqualified, and 31 nominations are pending. These are lifetime appointments that would impact women's access to health care for decades. Confirming federal judges is one of the many actions senators take that impact women. As senator, what actions will you take to advocate for women?
Well, first of all, I would try everything in my power to protect Roe versus Wade, which is what the Republicans are trying to do right now with these nominations. That is their end goal, is to get enough judges that will help them overturn Roe versus Wade. So first of all, we need to protect that. Another issue that's very local and close to Montana is the missing and murdered indigenous women and girls. We need to reprioritize how we are treating minority groups, including Native Americans, including women, including all of these people. And we need to start bringing those resources to the places they need to go. And we cannot start fixing these issues like protecting Roe versus Wade until we get rid of corruption in our government. We cannot continue the way we are running right now. We need to end the lobbying power. We need to get rid of gerrymandering issues. Everybody knows we need to do these things. We need to start implementing ranked choice or score choice voting options. We need to get dark money out of politics. These are the things that we need to do first, and then we can absolutely start bringing this money and these resources in to help these girls and these women that we need in our state, because Montana does not have the resources alone to do this, and I will fight for that issue specifically in the Senate.
Thank you, Mike. Josh, you ought to be able to go a minute on this one.
We'll see. I love Mike's passion. Yeah, definitely. You know, I know I'm not alone in this, but I was raised by a single mom, and, you know, that's, okay. We absolutely need to support Roe versus Wade with nominating and appointing liberal judges. We also need to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. For God's sakes. We're at 38 states. Let's ratify. It's about time. You know, I'm not going to go a minute or I'm going to cry. Mom, I know you're watching. I love you.
Thank you, Josh, and thank you for your passion. John?
So my classmate at the United States Naval Academy was Amy McGrath, and she is taking on Mitch McConnell. And both Amy and I regard our races against respectively McConnell and Senator Daines as a continuance of the mission and service to country. And part of that is to make sure that women are properly valued and empowered. When women are empowered, nations rise. That's a simple fact. When women are empowered, communities rise. So let's get back to McConnell. Not only is he pushing right-wing ideologue judges through that put women's health, women's safety at risk, but there are basic things on his desk right now. Equal pay for equal work. Let's get that done. What about making sure that we reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act? Make sure that happens. Let's make sure that red flag laws, and this is a gun safety issue. Let's make sure that targeted red flag laws are implemented so women are not at risk from a disgruntled spouse, a disgruntled partner. There's so much we can do, and I was honored to be here in Bozeman for the Women's March, and then I went straight over to Helena hit that as well. Thank you.
Wilmont.
I believe in a woman's right to choose what she does with her body. Now, I remember traveling the state and I was speaking to a group of a cross-section of the people, and this 17-year-old came over to me and said, and asked a question, and she said, "But aren't you a Christian?" I said, "Yes." She said, "So why would you support a woman's right to choose?" I said, "Because it's not my business. It's with her, her family, and her God." So there are a lot of the candidates up here tonight have stated that we need to do more. We have consistently not treated everybody with the same respect. Women are considered less than. When we talk about equal pay for equal work, pray tell me why, if we're doing the same work, why aren't we getting paid the same? But there's a solution to that. There's a solution to each and every one of these things that the Republican government is doing that we can solve. But we have to get into the Senate first. If we don't get into the Senate, these rogue judges will continue to make these rules and regulations that will affect us. We need to get there, and we need to get there by electing me.
Thank you, Wilmont. Cora?
Thank you for that question, and I'm very happy to be surrounded by four men here who support a woman's bodily autonomy. So thank you. I'm going to use this point. I think it very likely goes without saying that I am very pro-choice, and I have spent my career focused on empowering women not only through healthcare, access to healthcare, but economic empowerment, leadership, et cetera. So happy to talk and get into that. But really what I want to point out is the dangerous leadership we have in Steve Daines and potentially Gianforte as our governor. So Montana has some of the strongest privacy rules in our Constitution. We are a state that respects privacy, and it's something that's mandated by our Constitution. Yet we have a senator, Steve Daines, who was the first senator in U.S. history to introduce a pro-life caucus in the Senate. We have a potential governor or a governor candidate here in the state who is hoping would aim to implement a religious agenda on the state. It's totally out of touch with Montana. Montanans respect privacy. Montana women are strong, and we will fight for this right. My hope with this race is that we bring the resources and support into the state to not only support the senatorial race, but the governor's race, because so much is at stake.
Thank you. Okay, you get to start this time, Josh. This one has to do with education. Access to high-quality public education is the bedrock for opportunity and equality in our country. The National Student Loan Program has afforded many the opportunity to attend college. However, the program can leave students with high-interest debt and limited opportunities to earn the income necessary to repay those loans. These financial realities decrease and deter access to our higher public education. As Senator, what policies will you support to promote access to high-quality public colleges, universities, and trade schools?
Thanks for that question.
I knew you could answer this
one. Oh, man, this is a good one. You know, I don't have an advanced degree. I don't have a bachelor's degree. I dropped out of college at 111 credits. And the reason I dropped out was because my loans were so crippling at that point that I couldn't continue to go to school. I couldn't get more loans to continue my education. Thankfully, I found a career that it doesn't matter if I have a GED or a PhD, I make the same amount of money. It's not that big of a deal these days, but as senator, I advocate for debt-free college. Thank you. You should be able to go get an education and not mortgage the rest of your life paying for it, especially if you're not going to be an engineer or a doctor or another engineer. Thankfully, there's no lawyers up here. That's shocking. Apologies. You know, so student loan debt is one of those decisions that I have to make with my paycheck. Do I pay this? Do I pay that? You know, what gets paid this month? So I'm absolutely for debt-free college, and we can find a way to pay for it. Republicans find a way to pay for everything. Let's find a way to pay for some things. We're Democrats. We pay for good things. I'm going to sit down.
Thank you, Josh. John?
So as the only Montana public school teacher in the United States Senate race, I taught in a federally designated low-income school district in one of the nation's and Montana's most challenged areas, on the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation at Hayes Lodgepole High School. And I want to thank Montana State University because that allowed me to get my teaching certificate after I had served my country over four deployments overseas, two permanent overseas assignments. But let's talk education. Education is everything. One of my students who won the Most Improved Student Award that I set up at Hayes Lodgepole High School, had never thought of going to college. 2 years ago, he received his bachelor's in community health right here in Bozeman from Montana State University. Okay? So, but how do we get this to be affordable? There is so much student debt out there, and I do believe we need to think in terms of thirds. A third of that student debt should probably be relieved. I believe a third should be taken on by the student, and I believe a third should be relieved vis-a-vis national service, not just military service, but all sorts of different service programs, and national service is going to be a critical piece of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
When 44 million students accumulate $1.5 trillion in debt, we have a crisis. I support Senator Warren's plan where she will be able to allocate $50,000 per student. Look, we help the world. We have the resources to help our students. When I was growing up in Africa, my father said, I can't give you property or wealth, but I'll give you a sound education where you would make it on your own. I said the same thing to my kids, not realizing America, Africa, two different. So I'm stuck with hundreds of thousands of student loan bills right now. So I know what it is when we're talking about high cost of tuition. Let's do something. We have the will. We can do it. Senator Warren got a plan to help. If we can, $1.5 trillion debt. Will the students ever start to be able to make it on their own? Let's take that $50,000 and start helping our students, including myself, because I got a mountain load of debt.
Thank you, Wilmont. Cora?
Thank you for that question. I was raised by my mother and stepfather. Neither of them graduated high school. So when we talk about student debt forgiveness, I ended up going and getting a lot of education. Worked up to multiple jobs at a time to get my bachelor's, master's, and PhD. Worked, you know, one of my jobs to pay that tuition was as a union laborer. So I like to say, if anyone needs help pouring concrete, give me a call. But I worked really hard. And all the way through to pay for my degrees, and yet I still have $80,000 in debt. And we have so many young people out there who cannot invest in a home and really start their lives because of the student debt that they have. Here in Montana, I'm very focused on public health care and access to high-quality, affordable health care across the state. One of the main areas that we are seeing huge struggle across the state right now is recruiting and retaining providers. Why? Because of the debt. We can't. There are 52 of our 56 counties in Montana have critical primary care shortages, and they cannot find and recruit providers because of the cost of living, because of the cost of the student loan debt. So I'm very much in favor of partial student loan debt, of national service, and of making sure that we have debt forgiveness for critical careers and professions around the country and state.
Thank you, Cora. Mike?
When we talk about the young millennials who are getting through college with crippling debt, that's me. I have gone through the public education system, and when I got to college, I watched the tuition double in the time I was there. It doubled, and I did not get anything else. The education didn't change. The teachers didn't change. We got a new gym. That was cool. But this is the problem. This is an issue that I care a lot about as an educator. I've tutored my entire life, basically. I've taught multiple times in college courses. I've seen our young kids. I taught in the wilderness in wilderness therapy. I've seen our young kids try to go through these issues. And I watched my father as he was young, when he had eight children and when he graduated from college so that he could. I have 18 siblings. Didn't know if I told you guys that. Sorry, I usually. and I watched him go through the education system just to struggle, just to keep trying. And I'm in that same boat too. And this is why I support laws that, rather than encourage poverty, they discourage poverty. And that's why I support universal basic income through my Federal Teacher Student Act, because in my view, teachers and students are the same thing, and we need to expand that to include trade schools and apprenticeships and job corps and all of those different types of alternative education so that we are no longer just aiming for one type of standardized test in our intelligence in our children.
Thank you, Mike. All right, we're going to start again with you, John. This question is related to child care. According to the Montana Budget and Policy Center, in 2016, the average cost for full-time care of an infant was $750 per month and $650 per month for a four-year-old. Bozeman child care costs easily exceed these averages now since these were in 2016. In the Senate, how can you help working parents with this significant expense?
Well, this hits pretty close to home, Mike. As I said, our young son may be discharged from the hospital soon, made a completely miraculous recovery, otherwise I wouldn't be here. And we're looking at what will my wife do who works, and what will I do who has decided
campaigns
to run for United States Senate. And it's really fundamental, and the costs are so high. But I think where Democrats go wrong is we fail to look at the return on investment of the idea of universal child care. Because this is something that's just not a nice to have or a moral thing. It's all of that, but it is also pro-business. It is for the most robust economy possible. Because if we are disenfranchising folks who would otherwise be amazingly productive contributors to our economy because they can't afford decent child care, then that holds back our entire nation. We need to really have a big rethink. Thanks.
Thank you. Wilmot?
That's why I support $15 minimum wage. That's part of the reason. If our families cannot feed themselves on $7, do the math. $7 cannot pay rent and go to and take care of our kids. I've seen this firsthand in the work I do. There's no way we can continue to live the way they're living. $7 can't do it. $8 can't do it. $15 may do it. But we also look at, and so when John talked about universal child care, I support that because that's what we need. We need that subsidy. Look, if we're helping others, why aren't we using our resources to help ourselves? Instead, we're allowing our people to leave and go and stay on the streets because they can't afford their rent on $7. With two household parents working, it's $36,000 a year. $36,000 a year, and you take $36,000 a year and you put that into rent, that's $20,000 a year in rent. How are they going to feed themselves or take care of their kids? It's not possible.
Thank you, Wilmot. Cora?
Thank you. I want to back up just a little bit and talk not only about child care. We have actually solutions for that. We have child care tax credits. We have initiatives that have been proposed for universal child care and pre-K, something that I would absolutely support. But let's back up even a little more and talk about parental leave. One of the things that we talked about when I was at the State Department, one of the things we pushed really hard for in the Obama administration, we talked about, about women's progress and women's economic empowerment here in this country. And we referred to child care as the black hole of the women's movement. Women in this country, there are huge rates of women dropping out of the workforce to take care of their children. So it's not only hard on families, it's hard on the economy. There is so much evidence showing that parental leave for men or women, but parental leave, paid parental leave, which and there are some great proposals that are already out there that we could absolutely pass if we flip the Senate, as well as the child care tax credit and coverage for universal child care and pre-K, it's critical for the growth of our nation.
Thank you, Cora. Mike?
I love everything that's being set up here on the stage today. All of these ideas will do a lot to help our low end of the economy. I'm a teacher. I'm a mathematician, and I like to use graphs and charts, so standing up here in front of a mic is really difficult for me to show and explain all of these ideas to you. I would rather have a whiteboard and you interacting with me so that I can get your opinions and I can tell how you're understanding these things. So I guess the way that I would answer this is universal basic income is the biggest thing that we can do to start helping all of these people. And if we do it the way that I'm suggesting, we do it through the Federal Teacher Student Act, where we create a free university university, not just a free university, but a university that pays our students to go there, then if our citizens have that opportunity, we are encouraging them to educate themselves rather than discouraging them to. And at the same time, I agree with the rest of these things. We need to start implementing all of these issues, but if we can give those single mothers and single fathers, and if we can go through and fix the court systems, if we talk about the, you know, just how bad the court systems are as a divorced father and as a formerly homeless child, these things would not help in those situations. So we need, that's why in my introduction I said we need bold action and comprehensive change. We cannot just attack this from one angle. We need to fix the bottom end of the economy so that we discourage poverty, so that we stop letting people fall through the cracks.
Thank you, Mike. Josh?
Cora stole my thunder.
I expect that's going to happen a lot. Dr. Newman, you know, I'll say this. My child care when I was growing up was my grandparents or the Schrader YMCA outside of Brown Deer, Wisconsin. You know, it's I am 100% in support of universal child care, universal pre-K, and a paid family leave act. The federal government just passed 12 weeks of paid family leave for every federal employee. Why can't we do that nationwide for everybody? You know, there are solutions to this. I know plenty of single moms in this valley that don't know what to do with their kids when they go to work. You know, it's just another way that young people in this society are crippled between insurance, childcare, not making enough in wages, you know, living on tips. Anybody in this room live on tips? I mean, that's a minute.
Thank you, Josh. All right, our next question will start with Wilmont. It has to do with energy. Investments in infrastructure and new energy sources are often presented as options for responding to the impacts of the climate crisis. What policy solutions do you favor to address the climate crisis and why?
On Monday, Helena will be moving towards 100% renewable energy resources. In 2006, our Pentagon announced that our number one threat to national security was climate change. We need to address that. And if we're sitting here talking about everything else, climate change is not only a security threat, it's economic threat, it's social threat, environmental threat, and we need to start addressing that ASAP. What I would do, the first thing we need to do is get back into the Paris Accord. We need to start relying on our allies. We need to get back with our allies. And let's work on this together. America can't do it alone. We need our allies to assist. And that's what I'll do on my first day, get back into the Paris Climate Accord.
Thank you. Cora?
Our two biggest industries here in Montana are outdoor recreation, which really relies heavily on our public lands, and agriculture. Both of those industries that are so critical to driving our economy here in Montana are under serious threat because of climate change. At the same time, we have wind like many other states don't have. We have enough wind to provide energy to Montana 70 times over. We have enough wind here to provide 29% of the country's energy needs. Yet we have blocks, roadblocks that many of us have been following here in the state, but there are huge federal incentives for investing in renewable energy. That would be a high priority for me, not only for Montana, but for the country. Also, on the public lands front, we need to keep our resources in the ground for the most part. There are places where we have some great move towards renewable energy and transitional energy, but we have, since this current president, Trump, took office, we have had a huge spike in oil and gas lease across huge swaths of our public land across this country. We would need to reel that in immediately, create major incentives for investments in renewable energy, and think really seriously about what we're investing in our agricultural sector, including soil health, which plays a critical role in preventing climate change.
Thank you, Cora. Mike?
The way I've developed my platform, I'm really OCD, so I like to list things out. I've made it into a textbook format, and I'm working on getting all the details down, but it goes like this. First, we need to fix our economy. We need to invert our social safety net so that we are discouraging poverty instead of encouraging it. That's chapter zero. And then chapter two, which comes next, is we need to end corruption. We need to get rid of the corrupting influence of money in our education systems. Then we have chapter three, which is we need to expand our healthcare system to be universal and then to include mental health, because that's a crisis that we need to worry about. And one thing, I am a personal survivor of a lot of mental health issues. I have bipolar disorder. I have OCPD. I was abused as a child, which gives me trauma and CPTSD. I know these things. And one of the approaches I've taken to fix this, to help myself heal, is focusing on what I put into my body. What we eat is directly affecting our physical health and our mental health. And that is directly from our agriculture processes, how we just pump salt into our soil, and we don't care about any of that process. We need to get back to the land, and we need to start worrying about what the earth needs, and we need to ask the indigenous population and who have been here the whole time what solutions they have, because they know how to fix this.
Thank you, Mike. Josh?
Okay. So, I am for a federal ban on all new mines nationwide. Okay, so we'll start there. I'm separating the two industries, mining and oil and gas. I'm also for an increase. The current royalty on federal oil and gas leases minimum onshore is 12.5%. I want to increase that to 18.75% and take that additional 6.25%. I look like Bernie Sanders up here. Take that additional 6.25% and reinvest it in renewable energy solutions in the communities where the oil and gas leases are. There's money on the table. The offshore royalty rate is 18.75%. We can raise the onshore federal oil and gas royalty rate, pay for renewable resources, and start transitioning to a more renewable energy sourced country. Thank you.
Thanks,
very nerve-wracking up here. I don't know if you guys know that.
John?
As the only expert in energy out of this entire group and the only person with agricultural experience, having owned a 1,500-acre cattle ranch in north central water-scarce Montana, this issue of climate change is one of the biggest things impacting not just the United States but the entire planet. First of all, the Paris Climate Accords, increasing fuel efficiency for transportation, all of this is just the very, very minimum that we need to do. We really need to think in terms of four critical areas, and not just myopically in terms of the United States. We need to get China and India together at the table, and we need to make sure that we have a president who does not believe that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. We need to get everybody globally, and the COP UN system is good but inadequate. We need to think in terms of radically shifting to clean power generation, fuel, transportation, energy storage, which in Martinsdale in Montana is a billion-dollar project that's going to hire so many folks and is critical to scaling up intermittent solar, wind, and renewable energies. And the other thing is we need to get networked. We need to have smart grids. We need to make sure that people can recharge their cars or refuel their cars with zero-emission hydrogen-based fuel cells. The sky is the limit, and from job creation potential, it's absolutely within Montana's wheelhouse.
Thank
right
you,
now,
John.
The current policy is anti-jobs. Thank you.
All right, our next category, Cora, you'll get to start on this. It has to do with foreign policy. In your opinion, what is the most important foreign policy issue facing our country, and how would you address it?
I actually think climate change is one of the biggest foreign policy issues. One of the things that motivate, and getting back into the Paris, we actually have a resolution on Mitch McConnell's desk, H.R. 9, which would make it illegal for any president to pull out of a court such as that. We need to make it happen. One of the biggest reasons I got into this race was a dinner conversation I was having with my children at one point. My daughter, who was 14 at the time, looked at me and said, "Why are you so concerned with where we're going to college and what kind of careers we're going to have when the world is going to be on fire in 12 years?" It was such a gut punch. I knew at that moment, this is one of the things that motivated me to run, to make sure that we are creating a world that our children can not just survive in, but that can thrive in. So I would take climate change incredibly seriously as one of the first things out of the gate. It's one of the places that we have created the most bad will around the world under this administration, and so that would be number one.
Thank you. Mike?
We have a lot of issues to deal with in foreign policy, but I think that the most important one is getting better leadership and restoring faith in our government, because right now, if we can't even trust our Congress and our Senate to do the right thing, then how can we expect other nations to think the same about us? I recently took a work trip over to Europe, and I went around, and everywhere I went, I tried to talk about politics, and it was really interesting. Every time I introduced myself as being from America, I got this reaction. "Oh, I don't want to talk to you." But every time I said I was from Montana, they said, "Oh, that's kind of cool. I know some people from Montana." Or, "Oh, I've heard really good things about there." And that's because the people here, the people in Montana, the reason I moved here, I'm not native to Montana. I'm not native to anywhere, I don't think. I've traveled a lot since I was, you know, homeless at 16, and I've been a lot of places, and it's hard for me to sit down. But at the end of the day, I want to be here with these people who know how to take care of the land, who care about agriculture issues, who know where we need to go in the future, and we need to get rid of Steve Daines.
Thank you, Mike. I think that's a sentiment we all share in this building. Josh?
You know, according to the Constitution, the power to declare war lies with the Congress. In my opinion, the most pressing foreign policy issue is the authorization of use of military force of 2002, which almost single-handedly let Donald Trump take us to war with Iran on January 2nd. In my opinion, that's our primary issue. We need a new authorization of use of military force so we're not sending guys like Mike and John and Wilmot overseas. We need to bring our troops home. We need to focus on this country. You know what I almost said? The authorization to use the military force is our most pressing issue, because if we end up in another war in another country, another indefinite war, then we can't make this country any better.
Thank you, Josh. John?
As one who's been privileged to be entrusted with a top-secret SEI clearance, who's worked very closely with the CIA, with ONI, DIA, Special Operations Command, I was the liaison between the SEALs and the Nuclear Submarine Force, I have some very differentiated viewpoints on foreign policy. And, Josh, I think you are absolutely right. What has happened in the last 20 years, two of our longest wars ever, wars of choice, resulting in $6 trillion, as well as countless lives lost on both sides, and for what end? Very little. But I would also like to mention that there right now is a strain of authoritarianism. The United States' greatest allies used to be partners in democracy and free trade. Now we see this shift of authoritarianism. What was Daines doing hanging out with Putin when he knew that Russia was meddling in our elections? But that's just the beginning of it. What's going on in Turkey, in northern Syria with our Kurds, abandoning our Kurds? What's going on in places like North Korea where we say the problem solved, yet Taipeh-type missiles are right now pointed at the United States and our spatial border security has never been weaker. But we focus so much time on the southern border. Weak, weak. Danes is weak on foreign policy. He's weak on national security, and he fears somebody who isn't. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Wilmot.
Yes, sir. Foreign policy. As the only trained foreign policy officer here, I'll tell you our greatest threat is our president. Look, the United States, we've lost our competitive edge. I say that to say we're not trusted anymore as the leader of foreign policy. When we have Jared Kushner going to bring peace to the Middle East, we're joking. We're not serious. We're joking. The last time I think we ever had a real serious peace negotiation was the Camp David Accord. We have lost our competitive edge by alienating our allies, the people that should be helping us formulate our agenda. We've alienated them. So, to wrap this up, I'll say our greatest foreign policy threat, sadly, is our president.
Thank you, Wilmot. All right, our next question, and we're going to start with Mike, is related to Social Security. Despite being a successful safety net program, the future of Social Security benefits is uncertain and under constant threat. How do you view the future of Social Security, and what policies do you support to strengthen and defend the program?
Again, I want to mention that I'm one of those millennials who's never going to see Social Security. the program has been successful, but there are some math issues with it. When the population shifts and we have the baby boomers and all these issues, the money isn't in the right place at the right time. This is why I support universal basic income and universal health care. If we have universal health care and everybody has health care and everybody has free education and everybody has a basic income, then what are we worried about? We need to treat all people the same because we are all created equal. And we need to go back to that, and we need to believe that in ourselves again, and we need to stop arguing and fighting about everything and just get down and start working on solutions.
Thank you, Mike. Josh?
You know, it's Social Security is such a weird idea to me because I'm kind of with Mike, too. I don't know that I'm ever going to see it. But that doesn't mean that we should attack it. If you've paid in your entire life, you should get your checks every month. Absolute. I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, thank you. John?
So I couldn't disagree with you more. Social Security will be around. We're going to make sure that it's around. Okay? So one of the most unpatriotic acts of American history was in 2017 when Senator Daines voted for a tax bill that blew a multi-trillion-dollar hole through the nation's pocketbook, has resulted in greater than $1 trillion annual deficits, which will be, moving forward, adding additional to our nation's debt. But the game here is to give the ultra, ultra wealthy and powerful multinational corporations huge tax breaks that are frankly unjustified. Bringing up the national debt and then saying what we need to attack are entitlements such as Social Security, Medicare. We've seen the latest budget from the Trump administration with Daines' implicit endorsement. That is shameful. It's unpatriotic. Okay? So what we need to do is we need to make sure that our seniors are taken care of. That includes not only Social Security and Medicare, but it also includes rethinking the way we engage seniors in the community. I've actually worked with a startup nonprofit focused on reducing senior citizen loneliness and depression. That type of idea can be scaled in all sorts of different communities. Social Security will be around. We just need to make sure that it's properly funded and the resources are there. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Wilmot?
Fair is fair. When we allow people that make $1 million and people that make $137,000 pay the same amount into Social Security, that's wrong. The wealthy should pay the fair share into Social Security, and they're not doing that. Social Security is not an entitlement. We paid into it. It will be here for us. But we have to put it where it belongs, and that is let the ultra wealthy pay the fair share. It is so, it's unbelievable that we even have a system of this nature where someone making $137,000 and someone making $1 million paying the same amount. How can we account for that?
Thank you, Wilmot. Cora?
Yeah, I agree with you, Wilmot. It's not an entitlement. This is something that we have earned. Senator Daines has taken aim at twice now, between the Republican tax bill and his agreed with John, the implicit support of the recent proposal, budget proposal. Huge tax cuts. The majority of the tax cuts that were passed, 83% of the benefit, went to the top 1% of the ultra wealthy. I want to take a moment here, I don't know if this is going to come up, to bring up money in politics. I personally have taken the No Corporate PAC pledge. When I worked at the State Department, I worked in the Economic Bureau, and I watched companies draft legislation and hand it to legislators. The ultra-wealthy are not paying their fair share because we have a tax code that is not built for the working average American. And those benefits are suffering because of it. I'm deeply committed to protecting Medicare and Social Security, making sure that those benefits are available for generations to come, making sure it's not an entitlement, it's something that we've earned, and it's care that we need to and benefits that we need to protect for all of our communities.
Thank you, Cora. Well, folks, I hate to say it, but we've come to the end of the questions. We've run out of time. Because we need a little bit of time for you to give closing statements. Each of you will get 2 minutes to give a closing statement. We started at that end with questions. Why don't we start at this end with our closing statements? Josh, I knew you'd be excited about this.
just stoked to be here.
We're glad to have you here, too, Josh.
You know, I announced my candidacy on Tuesday, and the headline in the Chronicle was another Bozeman man in Senate race. I got to tell you, I've been called a lot worse. you know, I moved to Bozeman 11 years ago, and I'm not a native Montanan, but when I found this place, I fell in love. And I've done literally everything I can to live here. I've left here to live here. I've worked in places many of you would not want to go to live here. You know, nobody really knows who I am, and I'm pretty okay with that. You know, I'm a fishing guide. I don't think I'm an idiot, but I'm not a genius. I know I'm not the smartest person on this stage, and I will never pretend to be. You know, but I feel like I have a message that resonates. So I'm here to announce that starting Sunday, I'm getting in the truck, and I'm going to all 56 counties in Montana, and I'm going to speak to as many of the 1.1 million residents of this state as humanly possible. That's how I'm going to win this primary. It's not with money. It's not with outside influence. It's not with big media buys and fancy people in suit jackets. It's with gas and coffee and cheap motel rooms. So, if you've heard what I've said tonight, and yeah, admittedly, I've had a few fumbles. I, I'll be the first to admit that. I hope you visit Seconder for Senate. You can spell that just about any way you want and still get there. SeconderForSenate.com, and consider making a donation to my campaign. We, together, we can do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you. Michael?
I wish I could just talk to you all about my platform with the, again, with the chalkboard and the and you guys interacting with me, because that's how we do this. We do this together, and we don't do this, we don't fix our country by continuing to fight among ourselves. My message is for each and every person here. It's for everybody watching this. It's for every single Bozemanite. It's for every Montanan. And it's for every American and everybody across the world. Because we need right now democracy more than anything else. And right now democracy is at stake by pushing further and further towards authoritarianism. And the only way we do that is by fighting corruption, is by fixing our tax code and our economy. It's by fixing our healthcare system and fixing our mental health crises, so that we can finally get to what should be the most important issue, an issue we've known about since the 70s, and we have not done any very much at all as a country, fix the environment. Because we are a parasite on this earth, and we are destroying it because we do not understand the consequences of our actions. We can ask the question of the butterfly effect, but really what it should be is, if we kill all the butterflies, what happens? Right now, the bee population is dropping, the insect population is dropping, the whales and the fish and the birds. We've lost half our birds since the 70s. And none of this is okay. And so what we need to do is change the political narrative and stop fighting and come together as a people, not just Democrats, not just Republicans, but libertarians as well. Men, women, transgender people, gay, bi, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter your background. I was a homeless child at 16, and at 32, I'm standing up and running for Senate. If I can do this, you can, and we can. Join me at MikeKnowles2020.com.
Thank you, Mike. Cora?
Thank you again to everybody for coming tonight. I'm running for U.S. Senate because Montana deserves an independent senator fighting for Montana families in the U.S. Senate. Right now, we have a senator who is, if you look at his record, more beholden to corporate special interests than he is to Montana families. I shared earlier that my father died in a lumber mill accident when I was a baby. And if we had been closer to good care, he may have survived. I was raised here in Bozeman by a homemaker and a union carpenter with values that I think we all share. Hard work, caring for one another, and to be stewards of this incredible, the incredible natural resources that are all around us. I was very motivated by the loss of my father to go out and study and work in public health, and I have spent my life and career dedicated to making sure that that rural and native communities across the world and across the West and here in Montana have access to the health care that they need. As I travel the state, I hear stories of people who are driving up to 5 hours to get care. We have critical health shortages across the state. We have threats of Medicare and Social Security being lost or threatened. And yet we have a senator sitting in Washington threatening, with some of the best health care in the country, by the way. He's enjoying great health care. Threatening to rip that health care away from 1 in 10 Montanans, to cripple our rural health centers, and to make life for Montanans so much harder. He's not representing us. He's not fighting for our children's future. When I make it to the Senate, I have the energy, the infrastructure, and the experience to get there. We're great. We're building a wonderful movement. We've got thousands of supporters so far. And what I'm hearing from Montanans is that they are ready for someone who's actually going to bring them to the table, not corporate special interest. I look forward to serving you in the U.S. Senate. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you, Cora. Wilmont?
Thanks for having me here this evening. It's a pleasure, and I want to thank the other candidates. I'm running for the U.S. Senate because each state deserves two senators. Montana has been shortchanged. Montana has one senator. The other senator decided to join the executive branch. Imagine having two senators that will fight for affordable care for Montanans. Imagine two senators fighting for public lands. Imagine two senators fighting for you and low education costs. Most importantly, imagine fighting for that little Native girl that said, "What does it feel like to be safe?" That's why I'm in this race, to raise our quality of life, because being shortchanged is the wrong thing. And we've been doing that since Senator Deans got in office. He immediately decided to join the gravy train. But listen, I am the one to take us to the next level. Join my campaign. Go to my website, wilmotcollins.com. I will be ready on day one to make things happen for this great state we enjoy so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Wilmot. John?
Well, again, I would just like to thank everybody for being here. Again, Gallatin County Democrats, you, Mike, and my fellow U.S. Senate candidates, it's been a pleasure. I think these debates are important, right? You folks may look at five Democratic U.S. Senate candidates up here. I'll tell you what the Republican Party and what Senator Deans is seeing. They're seeing two candidates. One candidate, John Muse, that can beat Senator Deans come November 3rd, 2020, and also help all of the Democrats up and down the ballot, including for governor and for U.S. House of Representatives, where we have an authentic Montana woman about to make history, and four candidates who will give Senator Deans a free pass during the general election and will not compliment our fellow Democrats. So while I am all for this, and we need to get into those specifics, and this is not the time or place, but beating Senator Deans is an existential obligation. The stakes are too high for our country, for our state, for my family, for yours. It is not enough to see ad hoc Mitch McConnell or others get beaten. Senator Deans and his like need to get beaten. I am the candidate to do that. Why? How is that so? The only candidate with agricultural experience in an agriculture state. The only candidate who has served his country in a combat zone where Montana leads the nation second only to Alaska in military service. The only candidate to live in rural Montana where 50% of the general electorate voters reside. The only candidate to be a public school teacher and be able to champion education, and on and on and on. This is an opportunity for Montana Democrats to get this right, and let's beat Senator Deans. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Before we exit the stage, I'd like the five of you to just step out in front of your microphones, please. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm round of applause for these courageous candidates.